going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, powered by the FCN Network YouTube page. Thanks for taking the time to hang out. I got a great guest lined up today. We're going to start to talk MLB previews here on Mean Streets. Jeez, it feels like we're just baseball season's here. Spring is happening. Drafts are happening left, right, and center. So I feel like I got one of the best guests to start us off. We are going to preview the World Series champion, Los Angeles Dodgers. Yes, we're not breaking any news. They're phenomenal. But I got Matthew Davis at underscore Matty Wood. He is the lead high-stakes fantasy baseball and football analyst here at FTN, the co-host of FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast and Fabcast. You may have heard us talking football as well throughout the NFL season, but we are turning the page and we are talking baseball. And I know Matty has done a lot of drafts already, high-stake drafts. He has projections, rankings, tiers, a ton of content over at ftnfantasy.com. You want to get involved, ftnfantasy.com/pricing1999, the draft kit, and throughout the year, he's going to have the podcast, which is absolutely free for you to listen to. He's going to have waiver wire articles as well, columns dropping all the time. He's a busy guy, so appreciate him joining me today. Matty, what's up, man?
Hey, thanks for having me. That's a hell of an introduction, I must say. And I'm excited to talk some fantasy baseball and especially the Los Angeles Dodgers. So I'm ready for you to pick my brain.
I am going to pick it, yes. And I got to ask you just your feeling and the emotions of the Dodgers winning that World Series. I mean, this is a team that's been there and through the past 4 years. I saw the video. I saw the champagne. I saw the excitement. It was awesome. But just walk us through that feeling, man. And finally, after those 2 years of not getting it, and then this year, last year, finally getting it, best team in baseball from start to finish.
Yeah, I went to game one in 2017 against the Houston Astros, saw Clayton Kershaw pitch a gem, and they ended up winning that game, and it was a slugfest. Went to game seven, and unfortunately the results weren't what we wanted, and then they got smashed the next year against the Boston Red Sox, and then in 2019 they lost to the Nationals in the NLCS. So 2020 was, I know some people like to say, well, it was a short season or whatnot, but I think there were some more hurdles and a lot of difficulties and, you know, unique components that combined to make it a really tough season to win, actually. And they truly were the best team. So it was nice to see them get over that. I was the most happiest thing for me is seeing Clayton Kershaw win a championship as a Dodger. That was my biggest want out of all of it. So seeing that was exciting. And as you mentioned, the champagne shower, as if I was like in the clubhouse with the team. Just dousing myself in champagne as much as possible. But the funny thing is if we look forward, I'm not going to be shocked in a year or two. We're like, wow, now Kershaw has two rings with the Dodgers, maybe even three. So I think that they're moving in the right direction, to say the least.
I was super thrilled for him too. And everyone knows me. I like the other LA team that's not quite nearly as good. It's just tons of disappointment with the Angels. They got Trout, which is nice, but it was just awesome to see Clayton Kershaw and all the noise you hear too outside, you know, the choking in the postseason and not getting the W, and then the back injuries creeping up, and it was just so nice to see. And I still remember too, I'm like, obviously not even a Dodgers fan, just the feeling that he had when he walked out of the pen, right? Like just looking up, like finally, yes. And it was because arguably one of the best, like, I mean, that maybe we'll ever see, right? In our time, right? I mean, just phenomenal stuff. And now they bring in Trevor Bauer to add to Kershaw and Walker Buehler. And Price, like, he got three Cy Young winners there. Kershaw's won it, what, three times? Bauer won it last year. Buehler probably will get one by the time his career is over. And then Price has one as well. But before we get to the Dodgers, really not a whole lot of moves offensively. Didn't need to make any. They make the big Mookie Betts deal last year. They bring him in. He was phenomenal in the postseason as well. I want to talk to you about high stakes and drafting. I just want to get your strategy. I know this is a kind of a loaded question, and you've done a lot of drafts lately, and there's some people who are looking to get involved. And I think, like I said off the top, man, I'm not just trying to pump your tires, but I think I got a pretty good guest here to help us through this. What kind of tips would you give somebody taking part in an NFBC draft, a high stakes draft? Is it pitching that you think, you know, is it zigging and zagging? If people are going to load up on pitchers, you're loading up on bats. Just walk me through everything, including like relievers, when you target them, how important speed is, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So when playing in a high stakes league, there's, you know, obviously there's two different categories I like to look at it. So in the main event overall, that's a $1,700 entry fee. And there's a massive overall prize at $150,000. And so you're trying to win that against all the other teams that are competing for that overall prize. It's, you know, it's kind of similar if you want to look at it in a DFS perspective. So when doing that, you need to be in the 70th or 80th percentile in each category. And so there's simply no punting to be had or kind of being a little skim on a certain category. But if you're in a high stakes league like the Ultimate, which I'm planning on doing or I'm in, that's a $5,000 entry fee. And there isn't an overall prize. So you're only competing against the 15 or the 14 other league mates that you have. And sometimes you can take different approaches. And in high stakes leagues, you will see a lot of different approaches. Some teams will punt batting average. Some will not draft anybody with speed. Some teams won't draft anybody for saves. So it's really unique to each standalone league. And so you got to let those come to you. You have to stick with your plan too. You can't, you're going to be caught off guard because it's going to be really hard to predict what other teams are going to do. It's not going to look like your normal main event draft board. And so whatever plan that you have, you've really got to stick to it, even when people are zigging and zagging, because people think things get a really weird in those high stakes standalones. But to focus on winning an overall, like I said, so if you focus on 70th to 80th percentile, you have to put together a team that has everything. So for me, one of the things initially, I do not want to overinvest draft capital in the high top tier relievers. I don't think, or they haven't historically provided a return on investment statistically. So them doing it year over year doesn't necessarily happen because they get burnt out after the volume that they've had. And people just simply spend so much draft capital. Sometimes you'll even see once we get to the main events, they'll start going at the end of the third and in the early fourth. As of right now, Liam Hendricks is the first closer going off the board on average in NFBC. And that ADP is a 56. So that's mid fourth round. And it's just simply too rich for me. So I'm looking to pound the next tier. And I only want to get really one of those guys. I'm not going to double tap them or do anything like that. Catchers as well. I know people are intrigued with spending up for, let's say, Salvador Perez or JT Realmuto. That's not something I'm going to do either. I do not want to overspend at catcher. The position has the highest injury rate, and it only takes one bad, you know, foul ball for them to be out for a couple of weeks. And we've already saw that with JT Realmuto and the fractured finger. So those are two guys positions that I like to, you know, not overinvest in early. And I like to let things come to me. So I'm not going to come out with one single plan and you know, just try and be stubborn to myself about it. If somebody falls or if things are starting to work a little bit differently, then I'm going to just attack with what's given to me. And I like to look at each one differently as like a Rubik's cube. So it's all just trying to put the pieces together in a proper manner. And that comes with, you know, building that 70th to 80th percentile roster construction. So there is something to be said to filling, you know, all the categories. And it is hard, but if you start off by getting an ace and somebody that can contribute in speed, you're off to the right start. And I think that's important to do.
Yeah, finding those, they're few and far between, but those category fillers that will not hurt you right off the top of your draft, I think is certainly important. I've always had that mindset too, you know, just drafting with, you know, some experts at fantasy conferences, letting those top closers just go. And I've had success. I'd like to have one in the top 10, maybe in from the range that I have my rankings from, like, 6 to 11 or 6 to 12, and then filling out some other guys who could win the role, will get some save opportunities. I know you have several listed, some late round guys over in our draft kit over at ftnfantasy.com as well. Doing these drafts, have you noticed any ADP risers or fallers that have piqued your interest, or maybe that you've stayed clear of because they're going a little bit too early? I don't want to put you on the spot, but is there anything that come to your mind?
Well, yeah, so I've publicly expressed just a couple of guys I'll mention, not necessarily rising or falling, but in the early rounds that I'm kind of avoiding, and a couple of those are DJ LeMahieu, Ozzie Albies. I'm now concerned about Xander Bogaerts' draft cost, and he doesn't seem to actually be falling. I'm surprised. So he's had some shoulder concerns and he's still not playing in games right now, and everything sounds like he's on track to be ready for opening day, but shoulders do concern me. We have a new ball that's supposedly going to be, putting the home run per fly ball rate down a little bit for most people. And a guy like him, Ozzie Albies, DJ LeMahieu, Whit Merrifield, I think that you could be seeing, Xander has more power than those guys, but the shoulder does concern me with them. But like with Whit and DJ, you could see 15 or less home runs this year, and that's not going to cut it. And I just can't pay that in the third round. So that's interesting to me. People that aren't moving really are some of the bats that I like, which is nice to see. So guys like Eugenio Suarez, Keston Hira, Brandon Lau, they're not really going anywhere, but I think those are some of the guys that I would be targeting in the middle rounds. And I'll tell you one thing about rising and what will happen, and I promise you that this will happen. You will see the relievers, the certain ones, or the ones that we think are certain, they're going to slide up. So if you look, you mentioned you wanted to get one of those first 10, 11, 12 guys. The cutoff is right around, like, let's say Kirby Yates, because Montoya's already come out and said he's the closer if healthy, and that's what they're planning on having, what they paid him. Kenley Jansen, Craig Kimbrell, some of those guys that were certain, okay, these guys have the role, they're going to get slid up. And if you don't have managers come out in spring training mentioning Greg Holland or Mark Melancon or whoever for the Padres, Pomeranz or Pagan, they'll kind of just, they might even trickle down a little bit, but anybody that's certain with a role, they're going to rise. And then on top of that, the starting pitching landscape is going to rise as well. So not necessarily the first three rounds. So the guys that you're getting at the top in the first two tiers, down to, let's say, Tyler Glasnow, Sonny Gray in that area, they're all going to stay there. They're all going to go within the first five rounds. But you're going to end up having guys like Zach Eflin slide way up. Pablo Lopez is going to slide way up. Lance McCullers is going to slide up. Joe Musgrove, Chris Paddock, especially if you're getting positive reports on Paddock's control and how's his curveball looking, et cetera. So those guys are all going to start creeping up. And once they do creep up, you could be getting a discount on, hitters, someone like Michael Conforto, maybe he drops around. So it's each draft is different, but it's very interesting to see the market just continuously evolving.
Yeah, you mentioned Paddock. He's interesting to me. ADP NFBC is 107, starting pitcher 39 off the board. I mean, this guy, I don't want to get too much into him. I know this is a Dodgers thing, and we'll do Padres. Maybe we'll bring in Javi Perlezo to do some Padres. But I was looking at him. I mean, ground ball rate went up, fly ball rate down, hard hit rate down, with the bombs just, I mean, skyrocketed. This is a guy who struggled against lefties, and I was just looking at his starts. I mean, 12 starts, never pitched into the sixth, past the sixth inning once, never got into the seventh. A bit of a leash there on him, and because of that, five or fewer Ks in seven of his 12 outings. But he is a guy that maybe I'd have a little bit more interest in him than Dinelson Lamet. Like Lamet, knowing what happened with him last year, and what, roughly 25, 30 starts removed from Tommy John, and then the elbow popping up, and then not being able to pitch in the postseason. Like, do you take risks like that? Like, would Lamet just be off your radar? Like, that's it. I'm not doing it.
Oh yeah. I don't do that in a high stakes draft. I don't draft LeMahieu anywhere, actually. I
Fair.
think I said it was last night. His range of outcomes is of innings pitched is one inning, and then it's 150 innings or whatever. And there's a couple issues that I have with this Padres rotation in general. Not a lot of them go deep. Even Joe Musgrove, he's not, he hasn't had 170 plus innings pitched season. Chris Paddock, he hasn't either. And they've discussed interest or wanting to do a six-man rotation. It makes sense with how the Tampa Bay Rays handled Blake Snell. Yu Darvish has had injuries in the past as well. And I wouldn't be shocked if that does happen. If it helps preserve them, that's fine. They have the talent to do it. But if they are doing that, you're getting a ding in volume regardless. So that's a concern for me. And that's going to, you know, depress the ceiling for some of these guys. And I have to bake that into consideration when investing early in a draft.
Anytime an injury pops up for a pitcher, it's just completely off my radar. I don't care if they can, you know, they fall down boards. You mentioned the Rays. You know, Nick Anderson is interesting. A couple years ago, his numbers were, I mean, talk about strike percentage, swinging strike percentage. Everything was elite among the elite closers. And he's going roughly as a top 10, top 12 closer. But then you have Pete Fairbanks is in there as well, probably going to get some save opportunities. Is that somebody? Also, Soria, Joaquim Soria, Arizona is another guy I think that's rising up boards a little bit lately. Get some, you know, a proven closer going to be with Arizona. What about Fairbanks? Is Fairbanks on there as a guy maybe that you could grab late, could help you out and fall into some saves?
I'm not sure if you planned on bringing him up to, you know, because I'm prepared.
No,
you
just mentioned the Rays. So I was just like, all
okay.
Right.
That's my guy. So his NFBC ADP is 397. I have a projection of 63 innings pitched with 82 strikeouts. 9 saves, 3.6 ERA with a 1.23 whip. All of that is fantastic and solid. The Rays do have a closer pie, and it isn't going to go to one person. That's just not going to happen. But this guy has the stuff, the command, the control. Last year, there was some concerns about the walk rate going up to 11.1%. But I just think overall, when you look at some of his metrics, so whiff rate, 95th percentile, fastball velocity, 96th percentile, strikeout rate, 91st percentile. So he has everything plus a little bit of the role. We saw him get multiple saves when it mattered most for the Rays. That was coming in the postseason when they went to the World Series last year. And there's going to be opportunities for him, and he's costing the less of the three. So Nick Anderson, Diego Castillo, and Pete Fairbanks. And I'm sure there will be multiple other people that might get only one or two saves because that's how they do business there in Tampa. But he is my favorite reliever out of that bullpen when including cost.
Yeah, I love the cost. I'm seeing the range of outcomes. NFBC, like 246, 576. Like, there's a crazy range of outcome. And something has to be said about having him as opposed to streaming an average guy who's going to have two starts that could potentially blow up your ratios, right? Let's talk Dodgers. Let's do it. You want some goods. Maddie's got the goods. I mean, he's got the projections, the rankings, the tiers. It's all on FTNFantasy.com, like I mentioned, $19.99 for the package. You're going to get a lot of info and throughout the season as well. But let's talk Dodgers here. So there's really no value, like plus 350 to win the World Series, plus 175 NL pennant, minus 250 to win the NL West. The win total's at 101.5. I mean, I think they get there, but that's a lot of wins. Mookie, NL MVP plus 850, most regular season hits 12-1, home runs I saw 30-1, 33-1 stolen bases, 8-1 for the most runs. Cody Bellinger 13-1 MVP, 15-1 home runs, 10-1 RBI. Is there anything there? Is there any, like, would you take shots on maybe Mookie winning NL MVP at plus 850 or maybe leading the league in home runs? I mean, he was what do you have, 16 shortened season? What's that, 6 away from the league high? I mean, we've seen him flirt with among the leaders in homers before. Would you go there?
He would have. I'll go to say that he'll have a statue outside of Dodger Stadium in 15 years or whatever after that contract ends, and he'll be a future Hall of Famer, of course. But MVP, no, I wouldn't. And it's not because of him. It's no slight to him at all. But it's because of the talent surrounding him. I think Corey Seager could put up a 40-plus home run season. Cody Bellinger has, you know, 40 plus home run, 15 plus stolen base upside, and we've seen him win an MVP. So when you have guys like that surrounding you, it makes it really, really difficult to win the MVP award. And you know, and then including some of the pitchers that are going to be putting up some phenomenal statistics for them, somebody like Trevor Bauer and whatnot. I think that it's just really hard to single out one specific player and say that guy was the most valuable player in the entire league. So I think that the team context there does hurt any one specific Dodger from winning that type of an award. Cody Bellinger, he's planning on starting spring training games March 15th, I believe. So coming up next week, due to the shoulder procedure that he had after Kike Hernandez put it out of place celebrating in the World Series. So the plan is he'll be ready for opening day. Everything's fine. He's been playing in the field. He's been running. So live game swings will be occurring next week for him, and he's on path to play opening day. But 40 home runs is a lot. We have a new ball. When we did see him hit 40 plus home runs, the ball was juiced, so to say. So that's, I wouldn't put money on that either, just because he is coming off a procedure. He hasn't even, you know, ramped up yet, and we do have a new ball. So those aren't some things that I would likely bet on prop wise. I would never normally tell somebody to go and hammer an over on 100 plus wins on a season total, but they're going to get there. Sometimes when you look at a team and you say, like the San Diego Padres, I think it was Fangraphs actually came out and just rated them their number one rotation this year, which I find to be laughable because they had the Dodgers number two. The problem I have there when looking at the Padres is Yu Darvish has had injury histories in the past. Blake Snell doesn't go deep. Denelson Lamet, we've already talked about. What happens if and when one of those legs get cut from under you, and you know, everything's about timing and depth, and sure, they can have Moreno pitch and they can call up Mackenzie Gore, but we didn't see Mackenzie Gore get called up once last year after like three or four guys went out of the rotation in a shortened season. So I have real concerns about their depth. And when you have concerns about a starting pitching depth, you can't just be pounding an over on 90 something plus win, you know, season totals, because you know, you're asking for, that's a recipe for disaster. The Dodgers have a plethora of starting pitchers that can handle the job and that are going to handle the job, and they're going to mix and match them in and out. And so even if they do a Dodgeritis, you know, putting Clayton Kershaw, you know, kind of tuning them up, kind of like a Bugatti, you know, you put them in the garage, you do his service maintenance and you let them sit. You don't just drive that thing around all day, every day. You want to drive that thing around when it's, you know, most impactful. So they could do things like that. They've even expressed, Dave Roberts talked about the other day, maybe even using David Price out of the bullpen.
That's right. I heard that.
And so if they do that, what if they're opening up with Dustin May for three or four or five innings and then going to David Price? So then he's gobbling up wins. Or what if it's vice versa and David Price is now somewhat of a cheap opener? So we don't really know. And I'm sorry, I don't know, but to go back to the fact of putting the bet on over 100 wins, I think it's there because of that pitching depth and the bullpen depth. So when one guy goes down, the next man comes up. So you have Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, Julio Urias. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So yeah, pound the over.
Yeah. I agree. Like, a lot would have to go wrong for the Dodgers not to win 100 games because of just the depth that you said. If one of those pitchers go down, they just plug in Urias, plug in May, as you allude to. Yeah, there's a plethora of options that this Dodgers team has. You mentioned Corey Seager. So I think I know the answer because you said he could hit 40 bombs. I hear this all the time in baseball. And I know you do too. That age 27, the power starts to come. But his season last year, you know, it looked a lot kind of on pace for, you know, that 2016 season that he had the 26 bombs and he hit 308 and, you know, the WRC plus is 136. I mean, this past year, small sample size, but it certainly carried over to the postseason. 15 bombs for him. He hit 307, a 152 WRC plus, 394 wOBA, career high for him, 52% hard hit rate, career high for him as well, 39% fly ball rate, identical from 2019 as well. So you think that power surge is legit?
So we saw in 2019, he started getting the lift on the ball. The launch angle jumped to 14.3, but the barrel rate wasn't there. It was only at 6.3%. So that correlated to a 37.7% hard hit rate, which is sub 40%, which I don't like. But then last year, you saw him correct it a little bit, got a little bit less lift on the ball, which was optimal. They got the launch angle to 11.9, and then the barrel rate jumped to 15.8%. The hard hit rate was at 55.4%. The home run per fly ball rate jumped to a new career high of 21.7%, and I think it can stick somewhere close to that number. The walk rate is just insane. Career under the strikeout rate is career under 20%. Last year it was at 15.9%.
Awesome.
Which is just amazing. And then looking at the ISO, it's 278. These are mutant numbers. These are like, this is somebody that you're creating on a video game and you're putting in, what do you want their metrics to be? He's a monster when it comes to size as well. 6'4", 215. He's going to be hitting right behind Mookie Betts. He's going to be getting a ton of plate appearances. I truly believe the power is here for real. We've saw flashes of it in the past, and then it kind of came and gone. But yeah, he's already, and I don't like to wait spring training home runs whatsoever. But if he plays, let's say 150 games, he's going to hit 40 home runs. I'm pretty confident in that. And if you, and I don't like to extrapolate either, but he played 52 of 60 games last year. That's 156. If you want to multiply it by three to get your full 162 season, that would have been 45 home runs. I don't do that, but yeah. And then just the contact rate, just everything. There's just nothing to slouch here on the bat. He does everything. He does everything you want a hitter to do. Honestly, he kind of took that Christian Yelich, path there without the stolen bases. So that's kind of what you're getting. And he's younger. And what's odd is I think he's the healthier guy right now. So yeah, he's turning 27 in April. And in the third round, I think it's fantastic. I have him ranked quite a bit above, not quite a bit because he's already up there in ADP, but with Corey Seager, I have him right below Francisco Lindor. So I have him above Bo Bichette, Adalberto Mondesi, Xander Bogaerts, and Tim Anderson, who are kind of going in that same range.
Yeah, ADP 35, a range of outcomes 12 and 54. I took him in the third round in the Great Baseball Invitational. And yeah, I thought it was terrific value. You're right. I mean, all the things that you just talked about, it's, I mean, completely spot on. The contact rate for his career is 77%. He's a great ball player. And when I told people, a couple of my buddies, like, just here's my team, how it looks so far. And it's like, ooh, Corey Seager, like, oh, he's just always so disappointing. It's like, not always so disappointing. Like, 2018 didn't work out for him. It was like an injury-riddled season, of course. He hardly played. And then, it carried over. He only had the 134 games in 2019. But yeah, this is a player that I think we just, I agree. I don't think we've seen the best of him yet, which is kind of scary to think about, right? Turning 27.
Yeah. So, and the one last thing. So that K rate was 15.9%, right? Which is just amazing. And then when you look at like, whoa, but his swinging strike rate jumped. So his swinging strike rate jumped to 13.4%. The swing percent went up to 55.8%. He got a little more aggressive, but it didn't correlate to, sure, he swung and missed a little bit more, but he wasn't striking out more. And I just, yeah, he's getting confident and yeah, he's ready to just bust out, dude. People get tired. He was a shiny new toy. He had been drafted a few years ago without ever doing anything near this realm of productivity. And he was starting to get jumped in the third round in main events. This was 3 years ago or whatever. It was after 2016, I believe. In 2017, he was getting drafted up there, and he only hit 22 home runs in 600 plus plate appearances. The power didn't correlate. I know that he was nursing a little bit of a back issue or whatever back then too, but
Sure.
he's healthy. And some of the injuries he's had in the past, like Tommy John, like that shouldn't even be in somebody's mind as being an injury that's going to crop back up for, especially for somebody that's hitting. So, yeah, and another power hitter that's had that same procedure as Miguel Sano, and not comparing the same skill set, but just in a power realm, Miguel Sano still has his power, and he's had Tommy John surgery as well. So I don't have any concerns in the, injury path right now. I think that he's healthy, and he's turning 27. He's ready to roll.
Ready to roll. It's crazy though. You do see that spike in power right around the 27, 28 from some of these guys. So it could, I mean, maybe we just saw that, right? That's the start of the power surge here for Corey Seager. So ADP 35, NFBC, Mookie Betts 3, Bauer 14, Bellinger 15, Walker Buehler 20, Kershaw 33, Max Muncy 94, Will Smith 97, Jansen 130, Price 184. Yeah, you talked about potentially coming out of the bullpen, maybe opening up here and there. May 194. Pollock had a nice solid season, 196. Turner is a guy I chatted to you the other day about Turner. I tend to draft him sometime. I mean, falling outside the 200, really only going to hurt you in the stolen base category. Average is great. Like where he hits in the lineup, getting a little bit older, but still pretty productive and solid. Then you got Taylor, 217, Lux, 245. Is there any Dodger that you would stay? I'm sure Will Smith is one of them, or or you don't like to spend a top 100 pick on a catcher. Is there any Dodger that you have off your radar?
I don't have any Will Smith or Max Muncy. Okay. Will Smith, that pains me. If they did have, if the NL was going to have a DH, I'd have him ranked above Salvador Perez. But there are some playing time concerns. They are going to use Austin Barnes as well. So that's a volume perspective thing for me. And then Max Muncy, I think with, you know, guys like Edwin Rios lurking around and just the depth that they have, if you know, that batting average is subpar again, I think he could find himself in some troubles. We've seen strikeout rates from him that are concerning and alarming. So if that, you know, continues, if he gets off to a slow start or something like that, it just concerns me with the team depth. So those are two guys that I haven't drafted in and I don't think I will be drafting. But then there's a couple of guys that are there's two that have fallen, and it was after the Trevor Bauer signing, and that's Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. If they're falling in your drafts, you need to pick them up. You need to draft them. They are not going to hurt you. I know you're not going to get a 200 plus inning season from either of them, but you are going to get amazing whips, which is something that people don't really like to look at when they're drafting a team. They don't even put together the math on how their whip is looking. They're not going to hurt you in the ERA category. And then from a quality per innings pitch standpoint, they are going to be one of the best. So now factor in that there's no DH in the National League. All of these guys are getting an initial bump. The other guy is Gavin Lux. We've now heard that the team is planning on rolling him out as pretty much their everyday second baseman. So I wouldn't be shocked sometimes if you see him sit on the bench for a tough lefty and they put Chris Taylor at second base. But for the most part, you should be planning on putting Gavin Lux as the second baseman in that lineup card for the Dodgers. And if that is the case, his pedigree is just like Jared Kelenic or Alex Kirilloff or formerly Nick Senzel or anybody else that you've been excited about in the past. That is Gavin Lux, and he is just as good, if not better. And now he has, you know, he has worn his lumps. He has been called up. He's been called down. He's had to sit on the pine. He didn't get much, if any, burn in the playoffs. He only had a couple at bats. So if it's his time and he's showing up and he's playing, that's a steal. And he, especially when you look at the second base landscape, and if you look back, if we're talking in a year and you go, wow, Gavin Lux had 500 plus plate appearances, give me him over guys like Kevin Biggio all day. I mean, all day, and it's not even close. So, and that's what it looks like it could be. And right now, over the last 2 weeks, an ADP of 243 with a min of 201 and a max of 290. That's a discount.
Yeah, 20th pick in 2016. Been waiting for him. Another guy, I mean, 119, 377, ADP, 245. Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up. Obviously, I was going to, you know, a big name, struck out a ton in 2019, but he only has 151 plate appearances there, right? He shaped it up a little bit last season. What do you think is a fair projection for him? If he's going to be every day, and, you know, the Dodgers have a lot of options there too, like not just, you know, in the bullpen or, you know, the pitching rotation, they have a lot of options for bats too. What do you think? 450 plate appearances, 15 bombs, flirting with 10 stolen bases, hitting 250. Is that the floor? Like, there's upside there with that pick.
Yeah. So that's about 450. And that's what I have right now, actually. And it is at 15 home runs, 8 stolen bases with a 250 plus. That's a 258 batting average, which isn't going to kill you in this landscape. No. If you, let's say, put an uptick on that. So, shit, if he does play, you know, like we think that what Dave Roberts is now saying, you got to give a 20% uptick on all of those things, 20% more in playing time. So you go from 450, 90 more plate appearances. Now you're at 540, which is close to being an everyday player. You know, there's some days off against tough lefties, like we said, but now if you're doing that, and if you just wanted to extrapolate my projection and add 20% to each of those, it's looking pretty tasty. Then you're at 18 home runs. You're over the 10% stolen bases. You're close to a 2010 season here. And that's a projection. So these are being conservative, right? This is not baking in this dude's pedigree and upside. So, you know, if things pop off right and he puts it together, then yeah, you're definitely looking at 20 plus and 10 plus stolen bases, which is gold. And you're not finding that anywhere around, you know, where he's being drafted.
Yeah, no chance. Yeah. We didn't talk about Bauer, but he's a stud, right? We agree. Like, Bauer's just, I've been a Bauer fan for years. Shout out Joe Pizzapia. I've been in his home keeper league for 5 years. I got him for $1 like 5 years ago. I went through the growing pains of the command issues. I always saw the upside. And I mean, he's an absolute G. This guy is awesome. I have him as a top five pitcher. I see your rankings projections. You got him right there as well. No issues taking Bauer, say, at the end of the first or early second?
I've already done it in a $500 draft. I drafted him 10th overall in an NFBC draft. I have him ranked as my third starting pitcher. And I don't know why I haven't done it yet, but I really, really want to push him above Gerrit Cole. There is no DH in the National League. I think that, you know, people are kind of just ignoring that a little bit. And it's a bigger thing than just a little bit. So for me, it'll get interesting. It's going to be close, but I have both of them projected around the same. I don't have anybody projected except for Lance Lynn to pitch over 200 innings. So I'm ready to buy in. I think that he's I know it sounds funny to say that he's matured. It might not seem like that on social media at times, but from a game perspective or a game theory perspective, and who you're putting him around, like you mentioned, multiple Cy Youngs pitchers in Clayton Kershaw and David Price. There's veterans there. It's a historical team. He's pitching, you know, this is the most prestigious team that he's ever pitched for. This is his team growing up that he rooted for. He's from Southern California. He knows that he's scrutinized. There's people talking shit to him all the time. So he's highly, highly motivated. And he does want to prove you and everybody else wrong. And I want that when I'm investing Absolutely. In somebody. Yeah. And it's very difficult to project winning, you know, wins for a starting pitcher. He's going to get all of them. He's going to get so many wins. I only have him projected leading the league at 16. That's tied with, you know, DeGrom and Cole, but it's so difficult to project the 20 plus win season. You of just course. Can't do it. We've seen DeGrom, you know, have less than 10 wins in a magnificent season. So, I'm buying in first round, no problem. You want to give them to me in the second round? Thanks for giving me, you know, money. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I took him 14th overall in the Great Baseball Invitational. Yeah. I mean, wins are going to happen. You know, that DeGrom season, he didn't get any run support. The Dodgers are going to help him out there. He's going to have some run support. There's no question. If there's one knock on Cole, it is that fly ball rate continues to rise and rise and rise and giving up some bombs. But yeah, we're splitting hairs. Certainly studs like yourself, Maddie. Appreciate the time. One final question, Nick. Off the top of your head, like, who's the player that you have like the most shares of so far? Like a guy that you just keep drafting?
It is Austin Riley. I have him. Ooh. So I'm currently drafting in three leagues. So those aren't baked into the data right now. So this is only looking at 10 NFBC leagues, and I have him at 80%.
Is that because he's falling, or do you feel like, I mean, there's obviously upside there.
There's absolute upside. So, I could pull up the exact numbers, but off the top of my head. So things that went down, things that went up, strikeout rate, significantly went down. And then you look at the walk rate, it went up a little bit, right? So he was cruising, in 2019 when people, you know, started to get sick of him. He had a 36.4% strikeout rate. That's insane. I don't want anything to do with that. Now he cut it underneath 25% last year. So it was at 23.8%. And then when you look at every path that he's taken, he has gotten better. He goes forward and then takes a step back, but then he almost takes one step back and then two steps forward instead of the opposite. So he's continuously evolving as a hitter, and the pedigree is there. If you look at just the advanced metrics, the barrel rate's always been there. He's got a career 11.7% barrel rate, a career 43.8% hard hit rate. The max EV has been pretty much the same every year, 111, which is just, that's fine and dandy with me. He's awesome, man. The launch angle, 17.4 career. I think that you are about to see a budding superstar when it comes to power. And there is definitely a 40 plus home run potential upside here in this bat. So I jump him like one, two, sometimes three rounds early. If I do not have a third baseman or if corner infield's getting light on me, I'm going to jump him a little bit more than I need to. And if not, you know, if I'm already a little bit deep there, I'll hopefully let him just fall into my lap.
Yeah, and another guy, wide range of outcomes, 146, 394. I know it feels like I keep talking about my Great Invitational baseball team, but he's one guy that I have on there too. It's because he fell, and I know that he struggled against righties. He's still young. He's a guy that absolutely mashes lefties like a lot of players inside that Braves lineup. I had it up here. Yeah, 359 WOBA for his career against lefties, 121 WRC plus, 910 OPS, and a 330 ISO. Whew. It's good stuff.
Let's,
Maddie.
Here, let's give the people the hot take real quick. How about that? Let's close out on that. He will out-earn Chris Bryant.
Ooh. That is a hot take. I like it. Bryant's off my radar too. I don't know, like a couple injuries over the past couple years. Where is his head at? Did the Cubs want to move him? Where is he going? Yeah. That is a hot take.
I don't know
if that
clubhouse is going to be motivated either. I don't know what's going on in Chicago on the north side. I don't know. Yeah.
Producer Rob.
South Side's taking over.
Either. Yeah, no doubt. There's another team who can mash lefties. I'm a big White Sox believer. I like where they're headed. But you're right. Taking over.
Absolutely.
Sure. Matt, always a pleasure, man. I encourage everybody to check out Matt at _ Matty Wood. Listen to that podcast. It is phenomenal. There's going to be some great baseball content throughout the year. There's already a ton that can help you out through the drafts. Highly entertaining, highly intelligent as well. Some good stuff. So the co-host of FTN, a fantasy baseball podcast. It's absolutely free, guys, so there's no excuse. Maddie's got his rankings, his projections, his tiers, and a ton of content over at ftnfantasy.com. Just $19.99 for the draft kit. It'll help you out through the entire season. Matt, thanks so much, bud.
Hey, thank you as well. And one last thing real quick. We will be back together recording during the regular season for Major League Baseball. We will be talking Fab once a week, so I look forward to that.
I cannot wait. All right. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time to hang out. We'll continue to roll through these MLB team previews. If you're just new to FTN YouTube page, please like this video, leave a comment, a question, subscribe to the FTN YouTube page as well. We'll chat to you soon. Cheers.